Welcome back. My guest for episode 3 of the show is Lainey Hobbs. Lainey is a voiceover artist, podcaster, and the host of True Crime Fan Club. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome back, the one and only Lainey Hobbs, True Crime Fan Club. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, we know each other a little bit. We worked together on Sleepy Hollow for Vanished
yes.
a few years ago now, probably.
I know. Right? I can't believe it's been that long. I was like, I feel like we just did that. And years just go by so quickly. Honestly, it's insane.
It really does. We're in a vacuum. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, let's start this by the same way we start every other show. Tell me a little bit about your education, your professional background.
Gosh, my education. Oh, geez. It's so opposite of what I do. It's so funny. So I got my bachelor's degree at UTSA in history. I wanted to be a lawyer. So I didn't want to go down the communication route or, you know, the other things that people who want to go into pre-law do or even go to law school do. So I said history would be great because it teaches you about research and you know, being analytical. So that's what I did. And I love history. So it was perfect for me. And then I realized that the job market for attorneys wasn't great. And so I was like, you know what, I'll wait a second. And I started doing, I started working in student affairs in the public sector.
Yeah.
And then I started my master's degree in 2012, I want to say. And I got that in basically in administration and human resources. So it was something that I decided I wanted to do. I wanted to go into human resources with a focus on employee relations. And so that's why I got my master's. It's completely irrelevant. You don't need a high level degree for HR. They really care about experience more than anything. So they'll always take somebody who has, you know, 10 years worth of experience versus somebody who just graduated with a master's degree and no experience. So, my education was worth it, I feel. We'll see. Right now I am a, employee relations manager. So that's what I do for my 9-to-5. Big old telecommunications company. That's what I do.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I mean, let's dive into what we're here to talk about tonight. True Crime Fan Club. It's become like a staple in the podcasting community, especially obviously the true crime genre. Tell me about the early days of the show. How did the concept come to you?
Well, I used to, I've been in true crime for what feels like forever. I've been a connoisseur of true crime, if you will. Not in the way that like, oh, I love Ted Bundy and I wear a shirt and think he's hot kind of situation. It's more so I like to, you know, read different books, learn about different crimes and really study them. So I've been doing that for as long as I can remember. I think I got my first true crime book when I was 12, which was not a good idea, but it turned on that light switch for me to go, hey, why are people doing this? I had no idea at the time when I was reading the book that it was actually real. And then my mom, you know, was like, no, this is a real person. And I was like, I'm sorry, people like this exist. It was insane to me. So as I grew older, I started looking at Crime Library. It was a huge like Wikipedia for crime, if you will. Right. So they had all of these cases and all of these different crimes that were happening across the world. And I would like literally spend a period in school just reading through it because I just wanted to be super knowledgeable in it for some reason, in case somebody stopped me on the street and was like, hey, what do you know about Albert Fish? And I'd be like, well, I thought it was great knowledge to have at the time, but it also increased my paranoia when I started living by myself. So that wasn't great.
Oh, yeah.
So part of that, being that young and engaging in true crime, I really didn't have an idea of what was appropriate consumption and what wasn't, right? So there was this Facebook group that I joined and then eventually became the admin of somehow.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause all the people like ended up leaving. And so I was just like, okay. But there was this Facebook group that was like dedicated to serial killers and discussing them.
Right.
And so through that, I kind of like got the glimpse of both sides, like the people who glorify like killers and then the people who want to do like advocacy work. So I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And then around 2015, 2016, I was really, really stressed out at my job and really just overwhelmed because I was brought up to believe that my worth came from my work. Mm. So if I was successful at work, that's all I needed to be happy. Is if I was making money, then I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like working myself to the bone. And I told my boss was like, I can really tell you're unhappy. I don't know what's going on. And I explained what was going on in my brain to her. And she was just like, oh girl, you will never be happy if you're constantly chasing happiness at work. Like you will just never, ever be happy. So you need to find a hobby, like find something else to do outside of work that gives you, you know, like that invigorates you, that gives you some passion. And that takes your focus away. So like something creative, if that's what you do, like if you paint, go and paint.
Right.
And it was weird because it felt like she gave me permission to step away.
That's a great boss.
Yeah. And I never like thought that that was a possibility. So
yeah.
At the time, my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, I was telling him, you know, I just found out about podcasts. I listened to Glenn Washington's show, Snap Judgment. I heard it first on NPR. And then he mentioned something about iTunes or podcasts. And I was like, oh, what's a podcast? I have no idea what that is. And then I realized like, oh, I can listen to this whenever I want to, as much as I want to. And then I started looking into, I wonder if they have true crime podcasts. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
And that's where I stumbled upon Generation Y and The Vanished. I was like, yeah, I would start writing into them and asking them to cover cases that I was interested in. And then I was like, they're not going to do it the way I want to hear it. And that's no shade to them. It's just not the way that I thought the case deserved more, you know? And so I was like, no, they're just going to like discuss it back and forth, but they really are going to miss this point and that point. I want to make sure they hit this.
Yeah.
And my husband was like, why don't you just do your own thing? And I was like, oh my, okay, I guess. So I did research the, like for a full, maybe 6 months to a year, I did, research hearing it. I started talking to Marissa from the Vanished podcast, and she was really instrumental in helping me, like answering my technical questions and helping me really get started. And I kind of started this grassroots thing once I launched the podcast in 2016 of mentioning established podcasts in my social media.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I would go, oh my gosh, I just listened to blah, blah, blah episode. You should check them out. Or I mentioned so-and-so in my latest episode, you should check them out. So trying to do like this cross promotion and also promoting my show, but in an organic way, not, hey, just listen. Hey, so-and-so listen to my show. Hey, so-and-so, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So then we started doing promo swaps. I like to credit myself as the person who did that. So I was like, why don't you give me a promo swap in the true crime community? But I'm sure that's not true, even though I believe it's true.
I think it's true too.
But doing like the audio swaps was like, you know, a way to get trailers going.
Yeah.
And kind of building a community because I wanted to know these people. I thought it was so like the first time I ever met Marissa in person, I was in awe and I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. And then when somebody had that same reaction to me, I was like, oh, this is weird. Like, I'm just me. I'm just Lainey. Like, and they're like, oh my God, your voice. I only hear you. And now I see you. And I'm so excited. And I'm like, well, that's so weird. Like to have that kind of reaction to the work that you put out. I think that's so awesome. So my main focus with doing True Crime Fan Club is really just to do an immersive storytelling. Like I want you to be there. I want you to hear the story. I want you to feel those emotions, but you don't hear my opinion. I don't tell you if I think this person did it. I don't tell you if I think this person's a piece of crap, nothing.
Right.
There are other shows for that. I'm just a storyteller truly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the story of True Crime Fan Club. And then from there, my creative juices were just flowing and I was like, oh yeah, I want to do a podcast on this. And I've launched more podcasts than I can remember. And I don't know how I keep up with them. So
earlier you just mentioned, you mentioned advocacy versus sort of the glorification of like serial killers and true crime and everything. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because there, is there a fine line between advocacy and glorification of, you know, can you cross over that line pretty easily?
Oh yes, absolutely. And if here's the thing too, it, it can be done innocently, right?
Yeah, sure.
Because there are certain phrases, like there are certain ways to say things that don't look like you're like, oh, I'm team serial killer and I'm team victim, you know, like, no, we're always team victim here.
right.
So yeah, no, there is a fine line. And sometimes it can, like I said, be done innocently where you're like, man, the Zodiac killer was so smart because he hasn't gotten caught yet. But we forget that there's victims still living,
right?
You know, who may be in fear. Think about the Golden State Killer, who was recently caught.
Yeah.
You had people who were like, man, he's been, he's infamous because he hasn't been caught for so long and all this and all this, and constantly bringing him up and kind of cheering him on for evading capture.
Yeah.
When you look at his trial and the victim impact statements and you see how long these people have dealt with this trauma and pain, especially when there's no justice in this at all. People have lost their lives. People have lost, you know, their safe, their safety net of being at home and feeling safe in their own home. And people, you know, when you're congratulating a killer, essentially, for not getting caught, you're forgetting the victim in this. So I think things like that are innocent because you're kind of applauding like, oh, wow, like, you know, you have, you're either it's dumb luck or you are just really like smart and didn't get caught.
Right.
But there's a different way to say that. So yeah, there is a fine line. And then there are other people who do glorify it, who are like, yeah, thankfully I don't know those people, which is great. I haven't seen that in any of the newer podcasts that have come out. I mean, the true crime market is so saturated. So everybody's coming out with a podcast on true crime. Unfortunately, they're looking for success in some way that I don't, I mean, it's really hard to think you're going to reach the level of, you know, like Generation Y and things like that, because they've been doing this for 10 plus years. And they were here before anybody else was here. So, you know, I don't like to discourage anybody. I'm just like, keep making the craft, but don't make your content with the idea that you're going to be famous for it.
That's a, that's an excellent point. You know, in this show throughout season one and so far for what we've recorded for season two, one of the things we love to talk about, especially with podcasters, is the origin of the name of the show, their actual origin. This is a, you know, True Crime Fan Club is a very interesting name. Can you tell me about sort of the origins of that name, and was it always going to be that? How did you arrive at True Crime Fan Club, the name?
Yeah. So I wish it was like interesting. It's a play off of the Facebook page that I apparently admin. So I thought it would be cool to kind of be like, oh yeah, True Crime Fan Club. Again, I was not very aware at the time, as we've become more aware in true crime and ethics and integrity and things like that. I was not aware of it. If I could go back and change my podcast name, I definitely would. To what? I have no idea. But I definitely would, because there's some, like, I've seen comments like in different Facebook groups who maybe have never heard my show, and they're like, yeah, I was hesitant to give it a try because of the name. So I have to like contend with that. But initially the thought behind it was that, like, I'm the president of true crime content, and it's kind of like a varsity squad, right? So like everybody gets a letter jacket, you're in the club, and everybody like talks true crime. And it was more of an innocent play on being in some type of fan club versus being like, woohoo, serial killers are awesome, so glad they're killing people. Like, not bad at all. So hindsight's 2020 for me, and it's definitely I'm definitely fine, you know, with people using the full name. Now it's kind of evolved into just using the initials of like TCFC, and you know what you're talking about. Because it's a mouthful too, to be like, oh, the True Crime Fan Club podcast.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. I mean, there's a lot of, I'm sure there's a lot of people. We talked to Brian Dunning, who runs who's ran Skeptoid, who was that's a juggernaut of a podcast too. It's been around for, I think, probably as long or longer than Gen Y even. And you know, he talked about that on our very own show for Vanish. He talked about like, well, I probably is probably not the best name for the podcast, because people automatically think I'm going to come off as an automatic skeptic, and I have like this confirmation bias going in, and it's not good thing. So I can certainly see that. earlier, you know, you touched on like sort of, you know, we talked about the state of true crime a little bit, and you talked about, you know, creating these podcasts in an attempt to be famous. Some people might be doing that or mm-hmm. doing it for the wrong reasons. You mentioned, you know, it's such a flooded market now. It's the most popular genre in podcasting by like a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good thing in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of people do important work when it comes to it. They've become advocates in their own way. I look at Sarah Turney, for instance. Yeah, her sure. sister, Alyssa Turney, was murdered by her father and Alyssa Turney's stepfather. So I look at things like that where Sarah normally wouldn't, knowing the story and how difficult it was for Sarah to get Alyssa's story out there and to get the attention of the Phoenix PD, mm-hmm. her podcast gave her a platform.
Right.
And it gave the PD bad press.
Yeah.
And so if there's anything that like law enforcement hates, if we, you know, especially in true crime, we know law enforcement hates, you know, bad press, mm-hmm. especially if it seems like they're not doing anything, because that's the antithesis of what they're supposed to be yeah. doing. So I look at things like that and I'm like, yeah, that's really important work. Or things like you guys kind of share the same name, which I think is funny. So The Vanished, right. the true crime podcast.
right. Yep.
With Marissa, you know, she highlights people from all walks of life. It's not just people who have a good story.
Yeah.
It's people who are engaged in high risk behavior and whose stories wouldn't get out there. I mean, think about the Gabby Petito case.
Yeah, sure.
That happened. And there were so many people advocating for other missing people, and other missing people were found because other people were searching for Gabby. Mm. So while people were upset that there was so much focus on Gabby, she really ended up helping those who wouldn't have been found otherwise.
Yeah.
Nobody was out searching and doing these ground searches like they were for Gabby. And unfortunately, that's just the truth of our society. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
But the fact that even Gabby's family recognized that and said, hey, guys, we're on your side. We get it. We totally think that other victims deserve the same attention that Gabby got. And we're going to do our best to make sure that happens. And unfortunately, that happened at the loss of their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But now they can turn that tragedy around and help other families not feel alone, because yeah. so many families, when they lose somebody like that in an uncertain way or have no idea what happened to them, they're lost. You know, I covered a case a while ago where the police department literally told a mom, like, she's probably shooting up, and when she runs out of drugs, she'll come back home. Okay. You know, like, you don't expect that callousness to happen, but you have to look at it also from the PD side and say, how many times have, you know, somebody has come and reported somebody missing and then they show up the next day because that scenario has happened.
Right.
Is it fair? No. Does it happen? Yes. And so I think we have a responsibility within our genre to advocate for those who don't have a voice, and also just share stories. Like, I don't do a lot of advocacy work in terms of the stories I share within my podcast. My hope is that people learn from those lessons. Mm. I just recently did an episode on domestic violence issues and how, you know, 911 call operators kind of failed these people.
Mm.
And it was a hard thing to go through, because even me as a content creator, I consumed true crime pretty much every day. And that episode was really hard because it speaks to what went on in my own home mm. with my mom. Like, my mom was a victim of domestic violence. Mm. And I think, hey, that could have happened. That could have been us. Like, we were always so close to that being my story.
Yeah.
And so my hope is that somebody else hears that and is like, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be this story. I want to learn from this and move on. Or I want to help my friend when they're ready to leave. You know, that's mm-hmm. what my hope is. But yeah, I mean, I think we all kind of have a responsibility. And I think that it is good that people are consuming true crime, as long as they're doing it responsibly and people are sharing the stories responsibly.
Let's continue a little bit on that. Let me play yeah. the devil's advocate then. A lot of people, you know, we're in sort of the industry a little bit. I mean, I am certainly not of the caliber of some of the people that do the true, like yourself and some of the, like Sarah Turney and people like that. I remember when we did Jack the Ripper
mm-hmm.
for when we opened season two, and I didn't know they had crime scene photos mm-hmm. of some of the murders. And I didn't know until the night before we recorded
mm-hmm.
part one of Jack the Ripper. And my stomach was turning the whole time we were recording that particular show. So I can understand that for people that might be on the opposite side of that, you know, what do you say to those people that might say covering true crime, no matter the intention, and sort of merging it, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. with entertainment, a certain amount of entertainment value is not morally right? What would you say to people that have that position?
I don't try to convince them otherwise, honestly. It's not worth the effort to try and convince them that the work that we're doing is important or that it makes a difference.
Yeah.
To me, that's like saying, I like all my avocados to be green before I buy them. And you're like, no, I really like them ripe. It's like, okay, well, that's a preference, you know? Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. how I see it. I won't ever waste my time trying to convince anybody else, because I think it's kind of rude to do that. If you feel that consuming true crime is disrespectful, that is your opinion, mm-hmm. and you are completely able to not at all
just don't listen,
participate in it. Yeah.
Right.
When you hear that too, because I've seen it from even victims' families,
right,
who are part of like maybe sensationalized cases, and they're like, I wish people, I mean, there's a whole TikTok right now going on where the thing about Pam, for instance, is a huge thing that's happening right now on Dateline. And the murder victim's daughter, Betsy Faria's daughter, is on there saying, like, can we stop doing this? Like, this is so traumatic. And you're making light of this. Like, I can't tell if this is a joke in terms of like how you're portraying Pamela Hupp, or mm-hmm. if, you know, like she has to grapple with that. Right. Mm-hmm. There are people who are going to consume that story, regardless of whether or not she objects. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the nature of how things go. Is it right? And is it okay? No, if I think people should respect people's families, but at some point it stops becoming a personal story and becomes a public story.
Yeah.
So you lose control over who shares what.
Yeah.
Right. You cannot participate. Betsy's family doesn't have to participate.
Right.
But that's not going to stop them from that story running, or people like us doing podcasts on them. Now, if somebody from the family for a reason contacted me and asked me to remove the show, no questions. Mm-hmm. I'll do it. Mm-hmm. Not the show, the episode.
The episode. Sure.
It's like, I gotta believe the show
we'll be
stays.
Specific. Right.
Yeah. If anything else, you know, I mean, if they feel like my cover, I don't know how that could ever happen, but if for some reason they feel that, you know, my storytelling was, you know, inaccurate in some way, I'd be like, I don't even honestly respond. I just will be like, it's not worth it to get involved with this. I've seen people fight families for, you know, the rights to keep their episodes up. And I'm like, well, it's not your story anymore. Like, right. Just let it go.
Yeah.
You know, is it worth it? Is it worth it to continue the trauma? No. So
yeah,
that's just me.
Right. Oh, you make an excellent point. Yeah. I mean, piggybacking off of that, it, you know, obviously there's true crime, you know, conventions now and all this, and there's marketing plays a huge, I mean, it's a $1 billion industry. Let's just put it mm-hmm. out there. Is there a problem with sort of like marketing these really at the base of it, these horrendous cases and marketing them to like a general public? I mean, is that difficult to do? Like, does that present a unique challenge for creators that want to sort of do good work and make a difference in these types of cases?
I don't think so. I'm the co-founder of the True Crime Podcast Festival, right?
Yeah, sure.
My intention of that is to bring the community together and, you know, have people be able to interact with their favorite podcasters. Not really about the true crime aspect of it. It's truly a community issue, but we are all true crime podcasters. That's what we have in common, and we share an audience. Mm. Now, when I look at other conventions, like for instance, IDCon, their whole genre is true crime. They do nothing but true crime content, TV, et cetera. I don't think that that's wrong. They're the right people who that's geared towards are going to go to those conferences and go to those things. And there are other victims, like even for another conference that I don't like to mention because I don't agree with them for many things. But, you know, a previous conference that a lot of us attended before in the past had, you know, victims of crimes there. And you get an opportunity as a listener to put that, make that person real to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so beneficial because I think it changes how people consume true crime afterwards. So yes, a company is profiting off of it. I can tell you that I do not profit whatsoever off the festival that I run because I don't have a big name like behind me. Like it's easy for, you know, IDCon to sponsor their own, you know,
right,
conference and stuff. But I just posted about this recently and I was like, I'm an independent podcaster. I'm so used to doors slamming in my face.
Yeah.
So when corporations or, you know, even podcast companies, like, you know, the ones that we talk about all the time, or the ones that even host us, are like, no, we don't see the value in that. Mm. Or no, we don't see how that could be beneficial to us. I'm like, you literally host our shows, or you literally stream our content. So we're valuable to you until we ask for something. And so I think that that points to a bigger kind of industry standard, is that, you know, we see the top of the charts, especially like an Apple podcast. These are all podcasts that are not created by independent creators. Mm-hmm. It's very rare to have anybody in the top 10 who is an independent creator on any genre. They're all mostly, you know, done by like Amazon or Spotify, right, etc. And I have no qualms with Spotify whatsoever. They pay my bills too. So
yeah, sure.
It's just, it's, to me, it's just like, it's so hard for us, and we have to work really hard. We're kind of getting the slack down of things like Dirty John, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, they made a whole movie, and they did a whole, you know, series with it, and a whole podcast about it. And, you know, the family went on this whole speaking tour. And it's like, are we questioning them, mm-hmm, when that happens? Or are we questioning the little creators who are sharing a case that they're interested in?
Yeah.
And oftentimes those questions come, and it's easier to attack a little creator because they're more accessible than,
right,
the people who create Dirty John or any other, you know, bigger show.
Right. Does that, you talked about some of the larger networks and stuff kind of encroaching on the podcast, you know, just on podcast as a platform and as a medium, or as a media, I, mm-hmm, should say. Does that hurt independent podcasts in a way, or is that really sort of, oh, irrelevant? Yeah. I mean, what does that do as far as like encroaching on independent podcasts?
Yeah. So here's the thing, is that almost on a weekly basis, I'm approached by a new network who wants to take on my show, mm-hmm, who wants to host my show, do ad content for it. And so that's what I meant when these companies like see the value of our show from a monetary standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Then they want to take control of your content, and then they want to, you know, make sure you don't have your intellectual property when you leave, or if you choose to leave, or you're stuck in this contract with them and then you're not happy because things have changed, or they don't pay you timely. That's happened quite significantly throughout our industry. Yeah. With things like that, I'm like, there are shows that have started as independents and then moved into being kind of behind a corporate wall,
yeah,
right? I look at like Last Podcast, right, on the Left, yeah, for instance, huge independent show. And then they went behind the paywall, mm-hmm, and they realized like, oh, that wasn't so great for us. And so they went public, yeah, again. So yeah, I do think it's a problem, because I think that by restricting the access to it, you're removing what podcasts are all about. Mm-hmm. And I get like, listen, I get it. You need to make money, but if you're in this industry to do that, you're going to be constantly disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate in the fact of, all of these things worked out for me because of when I started my show.
Yeah.
If I would have started my show in 2020, we wouldn't be talking. You wouldn't know who I was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have kind of the success that I have. And it's truly about timing, and, you know, not to shade my own content, but there are people who are excellent storytellers,
yeah,
like who are great investigative journalists and everything. They don't have their opportunity to shine because of how saturated the market is, and then what shows people are told are the best shows.
Yeah.
So when people look at the Apple podcast charts, they're being told, here's the best of the best. And that's really not the case for the most part. You have,
agreed,
ad, mm-hmm, buyers that go and buy subscribers that shoot them up to the top. You know, you have, it's an industry that's plagued by people not doing the right thing, for monetary reasons. It just is what it is. It's any type of corporate industry is going to have these issues. So we're not immune to it just because we're podcasters, but it is detrimental to us as an indie podcast community, because again, we're only valuable if they're able to use us. Mm-hmm. If we're asking for something, like i.e. me going and saying, hey, it would be great if you sponsored, you know, the festival. Am I asking for like $20,000? No. Mm-hmm. But it'd be like, hey, I can make this event really great if I had this amount of money. Mm-hmm. And it would be cool for the podcasters to see like, hey, this company sponsors me, or sponsored this festival that I'm attending and made this part of it great. And I already am on their platform, or hey, I might go to their platform because they really care about indie, you know, podcasters.
Yeah.
And there are few and far between. The only one organization that has truly stepped up for us has been Spreaker.
I hear you talking about them on social media. Sometimes I'll see you tweeting about them and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. they're they're amazing. I have a great relationship with them, and they've sponsored the festival since 2019.
Yeah.
You know, and wow. I'm like, they truly do believe in the industry and the podcasters that, you know, are on that platform and recognize what we have to bring. And so I hope that other organizations recognize that, not to say like, oh, sponsor my festival. Like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I can do this without them. Right. I'm used to doing things without corporate sponsorships. I'll be okay.
Yeah.
But to me, it would be nice for them in a perfect world to show the appreciation for, especially like people, like think about Hunt to Killer, Best Fiends, yeah, June's Hunt Journey.
Yeah. Best Fiends. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Who else?
Yeah.
Daily Harvest, you know, everybody that you hear on an ad company where they're like, yes, we're paying you to ad nauseum talk about our product, but we don't think us sponsoring you or us doing that publicly makes sense. And I'm like, you already do it.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me. So yeah, it's really interesting. And I get to see that other side of it from like a promotion standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you know what? It's not worth being stressed out over. It's like, I know I'm going to have a great festival. I have a great reputation in this, you know, in the industry. And so people who come because they trust that what I'm doing is going to be good. And it's going to be worth the, you know, the flights and worth their time. We're going to have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. And this is really turning into sort of like a, you know, and I'll probably mention this again, but like a masterclass sort of on how you deal with, you know, independent podcasting, you know, how you operate within that industry and how you operate above, you know, failure, because failure is not above anybody.
No, yeah, it God, isn't.
I've failed, you know, countless times and continue to fail at things. And I want to ask you, that's sort of like really the theme of, I think is going to be the theme of season two. I ask this question of everybody, like, how do you deal with failure on a mental and emotional level, spiritual, if you want to go that way? Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you do for yourself? How do you handle that? How do you answer failure? Is it sometimes overwhelmingly difficult for you?
No.
That's awesome.
Not at all.
I love this.
I think because I'm so used to it.
yeah.
I think you get knocked down enough. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with, you know, how I was raised and everything. And I was used to not having a lot. Like we were on government assistance and I was used to the absolute, maybe even less than the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Growing up.
Yeah.
And so I have always had it ingrained in me that I need to work for everything that I want. Everything to me is a challenge. I don't even see it as a hurdle. I'm just like, hey, I want to do this. All right, cool. If it works out, it doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. I just did a screen test for something. And I was like, I told my husband, I was like, you know what? If I end up getting this gig, I was like, we should go celebrate. And I was like, also, if we don't, we should go celebrate. Like, wow. If I don't get it, I don't know why, but suddenly I'm just like a positive person about things.
Yeah.
Specifically within this industry. I think because I see it so much more as a passion project and a creative outlet, there isn't a failure to me because I still get to do what I want.
God damn.
You know,
you're giving unbeknownst to you and unbeknownst to listeners, like you're giving me something personally that's really powerful. So thank you for this. Cause I needed to hear this.
Yeah.
This is really,
yeah.
And that's why I ask the questions. Cause sometimes I'm selfish and I need to hear something for myself or I want to know something specifically. So
yeah. If this was a 9-to-5 thing, I'd be like pissed off that I didn't get this job or be like, damn, like I really wanted that. Because again, I still have that mindset of like my corporate career means so much to me. It's why I will likely never, ever do podcasting full time because I'm risk averse. Mm. Like I like having benefits. I like having a paycheck.
Right.
I have the flexibility I do now. Why would I want to change any of that? I get the best of both worlds. And if I were to make this my job, it's no longer fun for me.
Yeah.
Because then I'm approaching it like my job, which is very serious. And I have something that I need to do. This is all fun for me. This is creative. This is where I get to like really let all of those frustrations and stresses out and be like, man, I really hated that. You know, I really hated this episode or I really hated the way this edit happened before. Now I don't do any of my editing, so I don't get those frustrations anymore, which is nice.
Lucky, lucky.
Yeah, sometimes I do. And then I'm like, oh my God, I forgot how specific I am with my own audio. And so I'm like, oh my God, this is why I turned it over because I was going nuts. But yeah, I don't ever get upset with things that don't work out for me on this spectrum because it's all fun.
Mm.
It's my creative outlet. Yeah. Nothing's a hurdle. I just get to either I get to walk through door A or I get to walk through door B. Either way, I'm walking through a door and I'm happy just to keep the journey going.
Wow. I think people should rewind that and listen to that again. For people who are listening to this that are like aspiring podcasters or who might have a show that they feel like is maybe not doing as good as they anticipated, re-listen to that because that's really powerful. I mean, you've been in this industry for a long time. What is next for you? I mean, where are you going with True Crime Fan Club and everything? I mean, you're a voiceover artist, you've done audiobooks, like you're expanding, obviously. What's next for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just going to keep going. I have another podcast idea that I am going to flesh out and get ready for production soon. You know, I think the biggest advice I can give to anybody who's starting a new show is to make sure you have your full set of episodes ready before you even, put your first social media mention out there. It truly will save you a lot of time. And it'll help you stay ahead. A lot of times people struggle with the balance of it all because you do episodes, like some people will do episodes week to week. Mm-hmm. So that means the same week I just published an episode, I'm working on my next one. And then it's constantly, and then you don't get a break and then you're burnt out and you don't feel that the output that you're giving is worth everything that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So if you're a new podcaster, I see a lot of burnout happen. Mm-hmm. We call it pod fading in the industry, especially on the true crime side, because you'll have a new show who's like so excited. They want you to play their promo. And then 2 months later, they're gone.
Yeah.
And so I don't remember to go and take your promo out because now I suddenly don't see you online. If you don't focus on the immediate success of it, then you'll be happy. Mm. If you go in thinking so-and-so told me they got 5,000 downloads after 30 days, that's a fluke. Or they're really lucky or their content's amazing. So there are a few things you need to look at when you're doing your show. How's your audio? Because people will care about that because they're used to listening to well-produced shows.
Right.
Right. And that takes time. They may give you a pass if your content's really good. So those are two things you need to focus on. First is your content. I don't care how great your audio sounds. If you have poor content or it's not well laid out, it's not cohesive. And then two would be your audio. And you can do that very cheaply. Mm-hmm. It's not something you don't need what I have. This, what I have now was built off of my Zoom H3 that I still have that sounded terrible.
Yeah.
And then my ATR 2020 or whatever the heck it was. Like I was on USB mics for a very long time and in a closet with blankets over me doing this. You know, if you go in focusing on numbers, you will always be unhappy with it. It will never be enough.
Yeah.
You will always be disappointed. You'll start questioning, well, why was this, you know, episode better than this episode? And you're going to keep trying to replicate something and you're taking all the passion and creativity out of it because you're just focused on what you think is successful. And you're not really the measurement of that. Your audience is.
Yeah. God damn. Okay. this has been really cathartic for me. Okay.
You can tell I do employee relations, right? All I am is a coach.
It's built into your voice and built into your your structure and everything. But it's really important because your show is a staple. Like I said, at the top of the show in the community. So, you know, for someone of your stature to come on and talk about this stuff, you know, as bluntly as you have, like it's really been very good. So thank you for coming on and for doing this. Before you're obviously big into networking. Shout out some of your favorite podcasts. What are you listening to right now?
Oh my gosh. Oh, I just found a phenomenal show. It's called Black Girl Gone Podcast. Mm. I think it's produced by iHeartMedia, but it's such a great show. The host is Amara, and she's really, really invested in sharing these stories. She does a fantastic job of it. I would say my other one is Crime Lines.
Oh, yeah.
She's my friend, but I still love... I listen to my friend's shows. That's how it all started.
Yeah.
I truly do love listening to true crime. So Crime Lines by Charlie is really great for me. Let's Not Meet's one of my favorite shows. Where Should We Begin by Esther Perel and Ghost in the Burbs.
All right.
Those are just like a few.
Yeah, no, we'll have links to those in the show notes for the episode tonight.
Thanks.
All right. Well, before we get out of here tonight, we have this tradition that we've done. We did it in season one with the Inside the Actor Studio questionnaire that James Lipton always did.
Oh, I love that.
And And I did save one question. I did rip off one question from that questionnaire to add to this new one we're doing. But we are now for season two, switching it up a little bit and doing as a tribute, the Colbert questionnaire that he does, Stephen Colbert does every night to a lot of his guests. And so are you ready to run through these 14 or 15 questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, first one out of the gate, what is the best sandwich?
Ooh, like from somebody or like that I
just give you the best sandwich in your opinion.
In general. Yep. Ooh, the best sandwich would be a Blazing Buffalo chicken sandwich from Boar's Head with Swiss cheese, baby Swiss cheese, and mustard and sharp Wisconsin cheddar cheese on sourdough.
That makes me hungry. All right. What is the one thing that you own that you really should throw out?
My husband. I was kidding. my husband.
My wife would agree with you on that probably.
Let me see. What do I own that I should throw out? Oh my gosh. Like literally everything I own.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I would say I know what everybody would say. All of my Starbucks cups.
Oh yes. The plastic Starbucks cups with no lids that seem to disappear in houses all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot.
We have a handful of those too. What is the scariest animal?
A hippo.
That's a good terrifying. One. That's a good one. They are pretty goddamn terrifying. Terrifying.
I hate hippos. The only hippo I like is Fiona, but when she gets older, I'm done with her.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
They freak me out.
All right. Well, moving on. Apples or oranges?
Apples, 100%.
Okay. All right. Granny Smith. Yeah, Granny Smith is good. Have you ever asked someone for their autograph, and who was it?
Where was I? I've met famous people, but I can't remember. I think I asked, it was a Dallas football player.
Okay.
I'm not a Dallas football fan, Dallas Good. Cowboys fan.
We
so
can continue recording.
Okay. I'm a Steelers fan. Yeah.
Ooh,
so I don't know who it was, but I was young and I was like, can I have your autograph? And I don't know who it was. And I don't have their autograph. So.
All right. Well, this is kind of a deep one. What do you think happens when we die?
What I hope happens is that I have this belief that was shared with me that when somebody dies, they end up taking a piece of you with them. So you never really truly leave them.
Yeah.
So whenever you go to the other side, whatever that side looks like, for me, it's just like green gardens and sunlight, because sunlight makes me really happy that you are completely whole and everybody you love is there too. So I'm technically incomplete until I pass away. And I take great comfort in that because I've lost like my brother and, you know, my grandparent. And so my dogs and my cat. And so I hope that all of that is waiting for me there. Yeah. And I hope the same for my daughter, that whenever I pass and it's her time too, that I get her back too.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. Okay. Well, what is your favorite action movie?
Ooh. Oh God. Okay. So I love Steven Seagal.
Oh God bless you. So do I.
Even though, you know, he's problematic now, but at the time he was
Above the Law was amazing. Under Siege. I love Above the Law.
Okay. I think I'll go with where he's a cop. And
Hard to Kill.
Yes, Hard to Kill.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then probably any Jean-Claude Van Damme movie after that.
Wow, a woman but after Steven my own Seagal heart.
Steven Seagal will always win, thanks to my grandma. She's a huge Steven Seagal fan. I've watched literally every single one of his terrible D-list movies now.
All right. Well,
we're fans.
Seagal's a big part of my life, actually. I've met him a couple times and he's a very interesting guy. And I mean, I have a lot of respect for like a lot, especially his early work is like really, you know, those
first
like
so
four
good.
Or five movies are excellent. So
I made my husband watch it because he confused Steven Seagal with Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, that's blasphemy.
Yeah. And he also thought that, oh my God, John Lithgow was Val Kilmer. Like, that's just how like, he has no clue about entertainment, anything.
Wow. Well, that's a blessing and a curse, I think. All right. Favorite smell.
Anything flowery.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love flowery smells.
Good way to go.
I would say my baby.
Yeah. There you go.
He smells good.
Top smell. All right. How about the opposite? Least favorite smell.
Onions.
Yeah. I hate onions. God,
I hate onions.
Yeah. All right. We're syncing up here. Is exercise worth it?
Yes.
I'm just too lazy to do it, but it's worth it. I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a really very difficult one. Flat or sparkling?
There's nothing like a nice cold glass of flat water. After
it really isn't
a hot day, so it has to always be flat. I love sparkling though, so
I've never got into sparkling. My father-in-law drinks it like, you know, like nothing, and I can't do it. I tried, I can't do it. So
you put lime in it at least?
I have. It doesn't, it's like, for me, it's like,
wait, is he drinking club soda?
No, he's like Perrier. Like he loves Perrier. Oh, and I just like, too, that just, I can't drink it. I can't do it.
Yeah, that's not where you should start.
Same thing for beer for me. Like I never acquired the taste of beer. I never got it. It's an acquired taste. And I just never got that taste. So whatever. Well, all right. What is the most used app on your phone?
Facebook.
That's probably right at the head of the pack. Facebook and
I use Facebook. I mean, I have to be all over social media. So it's literally Facebook, yeah. Instagram, and Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter, TikTok for me, sadly. Wait, TikTok. I got obsessed. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Obsessed. TikTok's first.
Yeah. I got obsessed. Got my entire family into it. And it's terrible.
Follow you. Yeah. Do you do videos and stuff?
I don't. I will. So like for Vanished, we're considering doing like a, you know, some stuff on TikTok for Vanished at some point. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we probably will, at least for the podcast, but we're just voyeurs. We just watch everybody's videos.
Oh my God, all day.
I know, right? It's sad how much like time you can just blow through on TikTok. Like 4 hours to look up and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, holy shit.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, this is a tough one too. You only get one song to listen to for the rest of your life. What is that song?
The Great Pretender by The Platters.
That's a good one.
It reminds me of my husband. So it makes me happy.
All right. two more before we wrap up. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Sup, homie?
Yeah, there you go. Straight into the
you
point.
You made it?
You made it? You're here?
You made it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you believe in God, then you would already know he knows you there. So that's that wouldn't true. Make sense. So it'd just be sup, homie.
That's true. Okay, well, the last question of the night before we get out of here, describe the rest of your life in 5 words. That's a hard question. I know it's a hard question. Mine was link is in the bio. That was my answer.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, 5 words. So I would say fulfilling.
Yeah.
Sad at sometimes because
life is sad. Yeah.
Worthwhile.
Yeah.
Perfect for me.
Yeah.
And loving.
All right. Well, you picked a hell of a set of words. Okay. Let's get out of here. Thank you so much for doing this. Where can everybody follow you? Where can everybody find the show online? Can you plug all that stuff?
Yeah. So you can go to True Crime Fan Club podcast, True Crime. Oh my gosh, what's my thing?
Oh, it's I'll get it. TrueCrimeFanClub.com.
Okay, there you go.
Yep.
TrueCrimeFanClub.com. That is my website. I literally say it every week, so I don't know why I forget. And then you can follow me on Twitter at TCFCPod or on my voiceover account, which is Lainey_VO. And that has my link tree to everything else on social media that I'm on.
Awesome. We'll have links to everything we talked about in the show notes tonight. Thank you so much for doing this. I mean, it was really eye-opening and really sort of emotional at some points for me. So thank you for doing this. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Another conversation behind us. Thanks for hanging out with me and my friends. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media as we post each new conversation as they air. News, show information, and more. Go to facebook.com/meandmyfriendspod. On Twitter, you can search the handle MeMyFriendsPod. And on Instagram, search the handle MeAndMyFriendsPod. If you enjoyed the conversation tonight, please do me a favor and head to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher and rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Me and My Friends is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by me, Chris Williamson. The show's music is created and performed by producer Riddiman. The opinions on Me and My Friends are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Eben Films Incorporated. Chris Eben Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. Any audio clips used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of education and entertainment, and no infringement is ever intended. Me and My Friends is an exclusive trademark of Chris Eben Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Eben Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Me and My Friends is a Chris Eben Films production, copyright 2022. All rights reserved.